All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Friday, everybody. Today is November 7th, 2025. And our top story this morning, OpenAI is in full damage control mode. Crisis manager on speed dial, backtracking, you name it. They are freaking out over in AI bubble land after CFO Sarah Friar went on the Wall Street Journal's Tech Live event in California and very casually begged for a bailout from the government. And she didn't. She wasn't on her knees saying, please save our dying company. But when you go on TV and you say, we want the public, aka the taxpayer, to backstop our debt so that if we ever go bankrupt, which we're mathematically certain to do based on current projections for our losses, yeah, you're begging for a bailout. That's how that works. And of course, hey, this is a charity, OpenAI, that just became a for-profit company, and the ink isn't even dry on that, and they're already saying, taxpayers, we need your help. What the hell? So CFO Sarah Friar tries to backtrack that yesterday. Oh, I misspoke. All these other things about public-private partnerships. And she's going on CNBC later this morning. I'm sure CNBC is going to lob her softballs and try to make her look great and be like, oh, this is all just a misunderstanding. Please, by all means, keep bidding up our stocks and buying our debt. And then, of course, Sam Altman. Oh, my God. It was glorious last night. Sam Altman, he releases this long-winded Twitter essay that everybody's comparing to Bill Ackman. The comments were just hilarious on this. Nobody is buying the crap he's selling anymore. So look, where are we at here? I thought the demand was insane. I thought we're all compute constrained. I thought all these things about, you know, that we're in the tree in the nest and AI is going to fix everything. Why are we talking about bailouts? Why are we even having this conversation? Oh, that's right. We talked yesterday about how OpenAI is losing $12 billion in its current quarter, or they lost $12 billion in their last quarter. You guys understand that? I realize like it's the 2020s and we throw trillions around now, and $12 billion maybe doesn't sound like a lot of money. Somehow, it's an astronomically large amount of money. But OpenAI in all of 2024 lost $3.7 billion on $5 billion in revenue. And now Sam Altman is like, oh, our revenue run rate is $13 billion, or we're on pace to reach $20 billion. And yet they lost $12 billion. Their losses in one quarter were quadruple their losses from a full year ago. Holy crap, this company is where money goes to die. And now he wants the taxpayers to hold the bag. So of course they're freaking out over that. Of course, guys, this is it. I think... We're days away here from this bubble bursting. Now, look, we've got to get through NVIDIA earnings. And if OpenAI lost $12 billion, where do you think that money went? It went to NVIDIA, obviously. So NVIDIA is probably going to report blowout numbers just like Palantir did. Maybe nobody's going to care because maybe they're finally realizing this is all bullshit and that there's nothing supporting it. Also, keep one eye on those China chip sales. The sales revenue by geographic billing location. That's how NVIDIA hides or used to hide their Chinese chip sales, by billing them to Singapore. Well, China seems to not want NVIDIA's chips anymore, passing these laws that say new data centers need to use domestically produced chips. And then the U.S. is out today saying, no, NVIDIA, you can't sell your scale-back Blackwells to the Chinese anymore. If all of a sudden we get a big drastic drop in their sales to Singapore, how does NVIDIA explain that? Maybe somebody would have to ask the question to begin with. And we'll see when Sarah Friar goes on CNBC if the press is serious about asking real questions or just, would you like to take this opportunity to say why Jack is wrong about round tripping? And then hand them an open mic and not challenge any of the bullshit they say. That's probably what they're going to do. By the way, my video yesterday on my video got demonetized. That's fun. I did a video about OpenAI asking for the bailout, and I used clips of the Wall Street Journal's Tech Live event, and then I did my response and my reaction to them, as is protected under Section 107 of the Copyright Act. It's fair use, abso-freaking-lutely. But Wall Street Journal parent Dow Jones filed a copyright claim against me anyway, and my video got demonetized. That's the same parent company that told you not to listen to Twitter randos 2 years ago when I first raised the issue of round tripping. So a special one-finger salute to Wall Street Journal parent company Dow Jones. Keep up the bad work, guys. Remember, journalism is your job. You guys are the ones supposed to be doing that. What else we got going on this morning? We've got Double Line Capital's Robert Cohen is out with a warning about investors, fixed income investors, avoiding data center debt now. Talking about things like nominal structures. In other words, like the financing is getting more creative, off balance sheet funding, uncertain returns, you know, the whole AI doesn't make money thing. Telling it debt investors, avoid this stuff. They probably won't. They're going to sell it to our 401ks. We've also got U.S. airlines are starting to cut flights this morning. This is interesting here. Due to the government shutdown, now the longest government shutdown in history. So be careful, guys, if you got travel plans over the next few weeks. It might be making a mess. I don't know if this thing is going to last into Thanksgiving, but there's no end in sight to this shutdown. So there may be a ruckus at the airport in the near future. We've got the UK is raising taxes to try to fix their budget shortfall after they failed to cut spending earlier this year. We don't know by how much and on what they're gonna raise them, but more taxes in the UK. That's a country that's already seeing an exodus of millionaires who are just getting out of Dodge because the taxes were already raised. So I'm sure that's just going to work out great for the UK. We've got Chinese exports unexpectedly slumped in October. Now, this is interesting because for the last few months, ever since the trade war started, the Chinese have been leaning on other parts of the world to try to increase their exports there to offset the decline in exports to the U.S. Apparently, that is no longer working. Chinese exports on the whole were down. That includes a 25% decline of exports to the United States. Wow, that's a big decline. We are buying a lot less Chinese crap these days, which I guess is good. I think it's good. I mean, obviously, in the long run, the idea to reshore manufacturing, I get it. But that also means a lot of economic slowdown is coming. And Craig Fuller from FreightWaves has the details on that one, showing big declines in the container data. You can manufacture revenue with data center credits, and you can write up your investments to make it look like your company's earning money. But you can't fake free cash flow, and you can't fake tonnage on boats and trains and trucks. And all of that says this economy is slowing rapidly. We've also got some trade war updates. Nexperia, that situation appears to be normalizing. We've got the Chinese are now shipping their chips to European auto manufacturers who are rallying this morning on this news. The Dutch appear to be ready to give it back. That was kind of a crazy episode. And even as that section of the trade war is thawing, we've got the U.S. is blocking sales of scaled-back NVIDIA Blackwell chips to China. We already talked about that one. Again, how is NVIDIA going to explain a sudden decline in their revenue billed to Singapore right as the Chinese stop using their chips? It's almost like NVIDIA has been selling the chips to the Chinese this whole time, even while talking about the AI arms race and how the United States needs to beat China. And then he goes to China and he wears his special red suit and he acts like, oh, I've always been a fan of China. I love China, for China, by China, all this. It's like he's an arms dealer selling weapons to both sides. In other words, an just unbelievable douche. That's Jensen Huang. And, well, maybe one day we'll see him in handcuffs, but it is not this day. Commercial mortgage-backed securities, shout out to WolfStreet.com. Had a great one in that one a few days ago. Delinquencies on office CMBS has now hit an all-time high, even higher than after the GFC. And we've got multifamily residential delinquencies are rising rapidly behind it. Commercial real estate keeps getting worse. Oh, yeah, that other bubble that's still out there, that's still happening. Open Door stock is tanking this morning. They released their earnings. Their earnings were terrible because Open Door is a BS business model to begin with. Flipping houses because you have an algorithm, that doesn't work. And now Open Door CEO is trying to say, oh, we're an AI company. We're making heavy investments in AI. Oh, really? Is the chatbot going to buy a house and then paint it the agreeable gray and then flip it for a profit? Is that what's going to happen? Your chatbot's going to do that? Your AI is going to make money flipping houses? No, it's just Carvana with houses. Good luck with that one. Look, the meme stock traders bid this thing up thousands of a percent. It's a cautionary tale about shorting companies with existing high short interest. You could always run afoul of the Reddit guys and end up getting wiped out. But at the end of the day, if it's a bullshit business and it doesn't make money, it doesn't matter if Reddit guys are pumping it. The stock has a date with zero. What else we got here? A Tesla shareholders approved Elon Musk's $1 trillion pay package. That's really just a a hedge against inflation when you think about it. We'll look at some of the numbers in that. It's not that big a deal, in my opinion. And oh my God, this story from Meta that Reuters ran yesterday, you got to see this. Meta is just the worst company in the world. They're so awful. All the things like the election interference, the traumatizing little girls, all the crap that they've already been doing. And now we find out from Reuters that 10% of Meta's 2024 revenue was from scam ads. Ads for banned products, illegal sales, or outright frauds. 10% of their revenue. Think about how much money that is that Meta is collecting from fraud. Are you telling me that the way they cracked down on anybody who had anything to say about COVID, you're telling me they're unable to identify and stamp out fraud? Oh, but it gets even better. Not only are they able to identify the fraud, but that doesn't stop them from selling ads to the frauds. No, they just raise the price. So they're actually making more money off of frauds. And even better, when somebody clicks on their scam ads, the algorithm sees that behavior and actually throws more scam ads at those people. And considering the fact that these days Facebook is predominantly used by older folks, they're basically targeting seniors with fraud. Oh my God. You do not hate this company enough. That's all I can say. We got a lot to talk about today. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button right next to it, so you can come back tomorrow and have the wake up juice with the melon heads, because we do this every day. The S&P is down again this morning, 24 points to the downside, 0.37% in the red. The Dow is also selling off a quarter of a percent, 125 points to the downside. And the NASDAQ is leading the way lower, down by a half a percent, 133 points lower. We may have seen the top. I don't know. I'm hesitant to call it because it's just, it boggles the mind how big this bubble has gotten to begin with. But it's starting to feel toppy, isn't it, guys? I mean, it felt toppy this whole time, so it's hard to call it top. But this bailout thing is not sitting right with people. That has got people spooked. You can see it, and you can see the way they're scrambling to get her on CNBC today. Who knows what she's going to say? The Dixie, meanwhile, lower by 16 basis points, 99.55 for the U.S. dollar. Looking over at the bond market this morning, we've got yields are higher on the long end, a little bit lower in the middle there. 30-year Treasury, 4.710. That's higher by 2 points and change. The 10-year's at 4.107, higher by almost a point and a half. The 2-year, however, is unchanged at, 3.566. And the 1-month, 3.934. That's higher by 5 basis points. Interesting, a 5-point move in the 1-month this morning. Didn't see that one coming. Looking over at the commodities boards, metals are having another good morning here. We've got gold is now comfortably above $4,000, $4,010 for those December gold futures in New York. And we have got London gold is at $4,003. This is interesting, guys. We're now down to $7 or $8 of contango here between gold in London, the spot market, and the gold futures price. Are we going to see that flip? Are we going to see gold move into backwardation between spot and front month future like silver did? And if that happens, does that mean that gold is about to rocket again? I don't know, but for now, gold up about a half a percent today, $25 higher or so. Spot silver is at $48.54. That's up a handsome 51 cents this morning, or 1% higher. We've also got December silver futures at $48.41. That's higher by 46 cents, or just under a percent higher. We are seeing 13 cents of backwardation between spot silver and the New York COMEX price. Copper, meanwhile, is pretty much unchanged on the morning. We've got platinum and palladium are both up 1.5% each. And WTI crude oil is at $59.93, back below 60 here. But it is up 50 cents or 0.86% after a rough day yesterday. That's the December WTI futures at $59.93. Bitcoin is officially in a bear market, guys. 100,147. We're now down 20% off our highs, off by another 1,100 this morning. We dipped briefly below 100,000 overnight. Do we need to do the whole like winter is coming thing again, or you guys kind of got that message? It's probably going to be a rough couple of months for Bitcoin. I'm looking to buy some back in sometime around next October, November timeframe. All right, let's talk about the damage control at OpenAI. First, we got this one in Yahoo Finance here. Why OpenAI might not want to go public. Remember, we were talking about OpenAI going public at a $1 trillion valuation just a few days ago. Oh my, how that narrative has turned on a dime. Now they're saying, maybe you guys don't want to do an S1 filing right about now? OpenAI isn't preparing for a public debut, at least not yet, with complex and seemingly insatiable financial needs. Its executives are doubtless content with the obligations, disclosures, and instant quantifiable judgment that comes with trading on the open market. It is doing something in public, however, and at the very least is vying for broad public support as it pitches itself as a national strategic asset that the U.S. government should cherish and protect. And so far, dealing with the public attention from its pitch has been somewhat of an ordeal. What a freaking narcissistic sociopath Sam Altman is. He was a charity 2 weeks ago. Now he's for profit, and he's saying, my company, which incinerates other people's money, is a national treasure, and you should all be willing to give me even more money. What a POS Sam Altman is. Everybody can now see it. Are we still pretending like this guy is ever going to do anything good for anyone but himself? Amid the advocacy, we've already seen a few minor PR snafus seemingly cause major stress for CEO Sam Altman and co. Look at how they soften this. Look at how they're talking this down. Oh, we've seen a few minor PR snafus. Oh, yeah. That time we went on Wall Street Journal and said we want a bailout. Oh, that was funny. Why am I using Mickey Mouse's voice? I really couldn't tell you. That just kind of happens sometimes, guys. I don't know. It comes out. But leave it to your imagination or ChatGPT to paint a picture of what the stress of regular reporting and inspection might do to the ambitious, talented, and financially stretched operation. All right, yeah. Don't forget your knee pads here, Yahoo Finance. On stage at the Wall Street Journal event, OpenAI CFO Sarah Friar said that OpenAI was looking for Washington to provide loan guarantees to the world's largest private company. After a brief backlash, it wasn't brief. It was pretty intense, and it's still ongoing. Friar softened her stance in a LinkedIn post, walking back the remarks and clarifying her use of the word backstop muddied the point. Yeah, you could say it muddied the point a little bit. To drive the point home further, Altman gave another C-suite clarification in a lengthy post on X Thursday, the comments of which were freaking hilarious, again denying that his company is looking for a bailout before writing two pages about the bailout that they're looking for. So to recap, OpenAI is now clearly stating it isn't seeking a government backstop for its massive financial commitments. They're lying. They are. The reaction to Friar's initial comments and her and Altman's apparent walk back arrived at a touchy moment for OpenAI in a podcast released last weekend. Altman was asked by investor Brad Gerstner how his startup could fulfill a pledge to spend more than $1 trillion when it's generating roughly $13 billion in revenue this year. In other words, how are you going to 100x your revenue just to be able to cover the spending you've already promised? And instead of answering, Altman appeared to turn on Gerstner. Brad, if you want to sell your shares, I'll find you a buyer, Altman responded. Enough, in a narcissistic rage. How dare you ask probing questions of my charity company that I think is a national treasure and want the taxpayers to fund? The clip, which has been widely shared online and features Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella laughing awkwardly through the moment as if to relieve the tension, hasn't reflected well on Altman. Nothing reflects well on Altman. The guy's a piece of shit. I mean, we can see it now. Oh, it doesn't reflect well on Altman. When is the last time something did reflect well on him? I mean, no matter how much they try to spin to make this guy likable, he is just a complete degenerate. Meanwhile, we've got Trump's AI czar, Zach, says no federal bailout for AI after OpenAI CFO's comments. Again, like you got the AI czar saying no bailout. Everybody is doing damage control on this one. There's David Sachs. Venture capitalist David Sachs, who is serving as President Donald Trump's AI and crypto czar, said Thursday there will be no federal bailout for AI. He didn't say OpenAI. He said AI. The U.S. has at least five major frontier model companies. If one fails, the others will take its place, Sachs wrote in a post on X. Wait, what do you mean if one fails? That just escalated quickly. If one fails, are we talking about OpenAI failing now? Well, I thought what happened, the demand, the insane, and the fixing, solving physics and curing world hunger and cancer. Now, if one fails, huh? It's interesting. You notice the change in the language, guys? By the way, shout out to the Pegasus Fund on Twitter, at Pegasus Fund. Really good post by this guy yesterday, and I wanted to read this. Sam Altman today, we are looking at selling compute, but we need as much as possible. Do you see the contradiction there? We need as much as possible, but we're looking to sell it, which would indicate that you have more than you need, but I digress. Zuckerberg, last week, we could sell compute, and then he's showing clips of what they said here down below. Are we in a compute shortage or not? Because both are saying they're buying as much of it as they can and thinking about selling it. Now, here's the thing. They're talking about selling it just in case they overbuild. Well, remember, guys, big tech is the demand for the compute. So if big tech buys too much and they're like, it's okay, we're just going to sell it. Well, sell it to freaking who? You're the only one buying it. There is nobody to sell it to if you stop buying it. And so shout out to Pegasus Fund for pointing out the blatant hypocrisy here of this bubble. Also, by the way, guys, here's the screenshot. We talked about this one. I posted this on Twitter yesterday. This is the notice I got from YouTube saying that Wall Street Journal had filed a copyright claim against my channel and how they have demonetized the video, even though what I did was totally protected under the Copyright Act. And that is the same Dow Jones and the same Wall Street Journal that owns MarketWatch, which told you 2 years ago to ignore everything I said about this bubble, which is now being proven to be entirely true. Congratulations, a-holes. Double Lines Cohen sounds the alarm on AI debt funding frenzy. Oh, look, more good news for the AI bubble this morning. Fixed income investors should tread carefully when it comes to funding the artificial intelligence boom, according to Double Line Capital's Robert Cohen. You have to not only be cautious about the tech sector, but the tangential related sectors that are providing support for these new projects. The investment firm's director of Global Developed Credit said on the Bloomberg Intelligence Credit Edge podcast, who knows what the spillover will be if the music stops? Once again, the narrative shifting. Now we're talking about the music stopping, about companies failing, about bailouts. You notice it's all changing here, guys. The warning comes as a wave of borrowing from technology companies investing in AI sweeps across private and public debt markets. This week, Alphabet sold $17.5 billion of bonds in the U.S. on top of 6.5 billion euros of notes in Europe. The funding deal followed Meta, which raised $30 billion last week after another $27 billion private sale for a Meta-related project in Louisiana. Oracle, meanwhile, tapped bond investors for $18 billion in September. They're all borrowing billions from your retirement account to build this crap that's all losing money. Cohen pointed to novel structures like off-balance sheet funding, paging Enron, and the fact that no one knows whether these huge capital projects will make money. Actually, there's ample data now to say they won't make money. You have nothing but a story spun by notorious liars to say it will make money, and you've got a mountain of freaking data that says it loses it. He warned of overcapacity driving losses and flagged potential trouble for related companies and sectors, including power and chemicals. At some point, it's going to have to be proven that these projects are profitable. They're not, said Cohen, who he has spent 13 years at the more than $90 billion asset manager. If we find that most of them are not, then there's going to be a severe reaction. Again, we already know they're not profitable. Why are we pretending like this is a question? This is done. Morgan Stanley forecast the big cloud computing companies known as hyperscalers will spend about $3 trillion on infrastructure projects such as data centers between now and 2028. Most of those projects are going to get canceled. Cash flow can fund about half of that, but a significant amount of the debt will also have to be raised. The bank estimates, and guys, that debt is going to be raised from your 401k. Meanwhile, we got U.S. airlines are cutting flights and more to come as the shutdown drags on. Hey, Congress, keep up the... Let's see what's going on here. Across the U.S., airlines across the U.S. have started canceling flights scheduled for the coming days as the longest government shutdown in history upends air travel and forces thousands of passengers to change their travel plans. With about 700 Friday flights already canceled by the four largest airlines, the world's busiest aviation market has become a flashpoint in the long simmering clash between Republicans and Democrats over federal funding as President Donald Trump ramps up pressure to forge a deal. The Republican-led administration has said the reductions are necessary to keep flying safe amid staffing shortages brought on by the shutdown. At least one top congressional Democrat has called for more transparency to ensure the move isn't politically motivated. Out of 25,375 flights scheduled for Friday, fewer than 3% have been canceled, according to data compiled by aviation analytics company Cirium. United Airlines Holdings and American Airlines Group are the most affected, with the highest cancellations on interstate routes in Colorado and Texas. All right, so we've got disruptions to air travel, the first major impacts from the shutdown beyond SNAP and military pay, which, not to belittle those issues, those are big issues, especially if they affect you personally. But now it's going to start affecting travel, and we are approaching the busiest travel part of the year, Thanksgiving. Meanwhile, the UK wants to raise taxes. That goes nice with the whole cost of living crisis. Taxes going up too. Reeves puts tax-raising budget plans to watchdog for a verdict. That's after failing to cut spending earlier this year. Chancellor of the Exchequer Rachel Reeves has submitted her major tax and spend plans to the UK's Independent Office for Budget Responsibility, a key moment ahead of her set piece budget on November 26th. The plans, which the Times newspaper said on Thursday evening included increasing income tax without saying how it obtained the information, will now be formally assessed by the OBR. The fiscal watchdog will tell Reeves how the plans would affect economic forecasts before the chancellor finalizes her decisions. Now, guys, people are already leaving the UK over tax increases, so increasing them again probably ain't going to fix that problem. But, hey, the whole world is printing and spending and borrowing money. Nobody's cutting any spending, so sure, might as well print money and raise taxes. It's going to be great. You're going to love it. Meanwhile, Chinese exports unexpectedly slumped for the first time since February. I don't know about unexpected there. I would kind of expect their exports to be slumping in a trade war, but hey, that's what Bloomberg's telling us. China's exports unexpectedly contracted in October as global demand failed to offset the deepening slump in shipments to the U.S., dealing a blow to an economy already slowing amid sluggish consumer spending and investment at home. Exports fell for the first time in 8 months, dropping 1.1% from a year earlier, according to official data released Friday. Shipments to all nations except the U.S. rose by 3.1%, but that's not enough to compensate for the more than 25% decline to America. That is a huge drop in the stuff we're buying from the Chinese. I don't think they can just easily absorb that. With the U.S. reducing tariffs on Chinese goods by 10% from next Monday, it's possible trade between the world's two largest economies could see a pickup through the year end. The effect may prove limited, however, because duties on Chinese goods are still higher than those on products from countries such as Vietnam. Guys, look, China's already got their real estate crisis that's still ongoing. Home sales and prices continue to fall in China. We've got consumer slowdowns in China caused by higher unemployment, now fewer exports. The Chinese economy has got a lot of problems on their hands, as does ours, mind you. And Craig Fuller from FreightWaves, again, Craig's making an appearance on the channel today. Container exports out of China to the U.S. on a seasonally adjusted basis, down 15% year over year. Every year, there's a seasonal drop in October. This is Golden Week in China, where the factories shut down and everyone takes the week off. We were expecting a more aggressive bounce back in container flows, but that didn't happen this year. This chart tells us more about the state of the U.S. economy than China's. The U.S. goods economy is in real trouble. So look, Craig Fuller has his finger on the pulse of U.S. logistics. And, you know, his take on this is the exports is worse for us, that the exports are falling. Yeah, it's bad for the Chinese, but he thinks it's worse news for us. Now, what we're looking at here in the blue line is the 20-foot equivalent units, the number of cargo containers flowing from China into the U.S. And the blue line is this year, the green line is 2024, and the red line 2023. And you can see here every year right around the middle of October, you see this big drop from Golden Week, but we have come back, and we have come back much less than we came back in prior years here. So a noticeable gap between this year and the prior 2 years. That is the goods economy slowing, even as the AI bubble is starting to deflate. It hasn't burst yet, but it's starting to deflate. Not looking good for the U.S. economy here, or the Chinese for that matter. But we are seeing an easing of tensions here. Nexperia spat eases as chip flows. Open door to Dutch retreat. So Nexperia, China, is finally shipping chips to Europe. And then Nexperia, the Netherlands, appears to be like, okay, we'll give you back your company. That seems to be what's going on here. China is allowing Dutch chipmaker Nexperia to export again from its operations in the country, setting the stage for the Netherlands to back down and suspend its powers over the Chinese companies. The critical power control chips have indeed started to get shipped again from Nexperia's Chinese facility, according to officials from several auto companies. European automakers are having a pretty good morning on this news. We haven't yet got confirmation that the Dutch are going to be giving the company back to the Chinese, but that seems like a formality here at this point. Even as that thaws over in Europe, we've got this one here, U.S. to block NVIDIA's sale of scaled-down AI chips to China, the information reports. Jensen keeps trying to sell them chips to China, and he keeps getting told no by the White House. He's doing it anyway. He's just using smugglers instead. And the Chinese now say they don't want them. The White House has informed other federal agencies that it will not permit NVIDIA to sell its latest scaled-down AI chips to China, the information reported on Thursday, citing three people familiar with the matter. NVIDIA has provided samples of the chip to several of its Chinese customers, according to the report. The chip, known as the B30A, can be utilized to train large language models when efficiently arranged in large clusters, a capability many Chinese companies require. An NVIDIA spokesperson told Reuters that the company has zero share in China's highly competitive market for data center compute and do not include it in our guidance. Yeah, that all shows up in the Singapore numbers. The White House did not immediately respond to Reuters' request. NVIDIA is working on modifying the B30A's design in hopes that the U.S. administration will reconsider its stance, the information report said. The California-based company, however, has also been facing regulatory headwinds in China. The Chinese government has issued guidance saying don't use NVIDIA chips. NVIDIA stock is down a little bit this morning, 1.7% lower after falling 1.6%, the opening bell has rung, down 1.4%, $185. Now down quite a bit off our highs. We've got NVIDIA earnings coming up in a few days here, guys. That's going to be an important moment for the market. It always is. It's the biggest company in the world. But if NVIDIA goes the way of Palantir, look out below. That's all I can tell you. And we got a banger in Wolf Street here. This one's a few days old. I just caught wind of this one late last night. Office CMBS delinquency rate hits a record 11.8%, much worse than the financial crisis. And multifamily delinquencies soared to 7.1%. Commercial real estate loans on office and multifamily properties got further bludgeoned in October. The delinquency rate of office mortgages that has been securitized into commercial mortgage-backed securities spiked to 11.8% in October, the worst ever, and over a percentage point higher than the peak of the financial crisis meltdown, according to data by TREP, which tracks and analyzes CMBS. How are these bonds not failing with an 11.8% delinquency rate? The interest rates on these bonds is not high enough to make up for delinquencies that high. CMBS are bonds that are sold to institutional investors around the world, such as bond funds, insurers, pension funds, real estate investment trusts, you know, your retirement. Banks that originated these mortgages are off the hook here, and investors eat the losses. See my discussions on who is on the hook for CRE mortgages in the comments just below this article. They were good until they suddenly weren't. In October of 2022, the office CMBS delinquency rate was still 1.8%. In the 3 years since then, it exploded by 10 percentage points. Older office towers are getting crushed by a flight to quality and by corporate downsizing of office space due to continued working from home as the much ballyhooed RTO has stalled. Even newer office towers are getting crushed by corporate downsizing and consolidation of their office footprints. For multifamily CMBS, the delinquency rate rose to 7.1%, the worst since December of 2015. Multifamily CMBS are backed by rental apartment property and mortgages. Guys, commercial real estate is really in trouble here. It's been for a couple of years, and yet we just haven't had that reckoning. We haven't had that surge of price discovery. There's plenty of anecdotes out there about buildings selling for like 5, 6% of what they sold for 10 years ago. But these bonds somehow haven't failed. I don't get that. Somebody explain that to me. How do 11.8% delinquency rates not fail these bonds outright? Meanwhile, retail darling Opendoor plummets on a Q3 miss and management's cautious guidance. Oh, that's right. Opendoor's business model sucks. I forgot to mention that. Opendoor Technologies plunged nearly 15% in after-hours trading Thursday, after the real estate platform reported third quarter results that missed analysts' expectations and warned of continued pressure on margins in the coming quarter. The company reported a third quarter loss of 12 cents per share. That's worse than the estimates of 7 cents per share. Revenue came in at $915 million, short of estimates of $922 million. representing a 33.6% decline from $1.38 billion in the same quarter last year. CEO Kaz Nejatian, who took the helm just a month ago, outlined a strategic shift to refocus the company as a software and AI company. Dude, you flip houses. What do you mean software and AI? Okay, moving on. While committing to return Open Door to profitability somehow, our path to profitability is clear. Transact with more sellers, strengthen our unit economics through better pricing and resale speed, and drive operational efficiency by being ruthless on expenses. The company has seen a volatile quarter driven by activist pressure from retail investors led by Eric Jackson, head of EMJ Capital. Over the summer, the stock had risen from the depths of 50 cents a share to over $10 a share as its retail investor base pushed for management and strategy change, resulting in the appointment of Nejatian. The company's outlook for the fourth quarter added to investor concerns. Opendoor expects revenue to decrease approximately 35% quarter over quarter due to low inventory levels, with contribution margin facing near-term pressure as the company clears old inventory. Opendoor has sold 2,568 homes during the quarter, down from 3,615 in the same period last year. The company purchased just 1,169 homes, a 66.6% decline from 3,504 in the same quarter a year ago. Notably, 51% of homes in inventory at quarter end had been on the market for more than 120 days, up from 23% a year ago. This company is toast, dude. Opendoor Technology is down 15.9%, trading at $5.51. Look at the year-to-date chart, guys. This thing was over 10 bucks a few weeks ago. Lost about half of that since then. Look, these meme stocks, just it doesn't pay to chase them, guys. By the time you hear about the move, it has already happened. I've seen this before. I have lived this before. Just be careful in names like this. And also be careful shorting them, too, because, you know, you can have a BS business model like Open Door, and then along comes a guy like Eric Jackson, and he could 10x the price of the stock and wipe you out. You can still be right and lose everything. Look, Tesla shareholders approved Musk's $1 trillion pay plan with over 75% voting in favor. The takeaway from this one, guys, yeah, it's a huge pay period, you know, $1 trillion. It's a lot of money. But in order for Elon to actually get this $1 trillion over like the next 10 years, Tesla stock would have to go to like an $8.5 trillion market cap. All right. So this is not a serious thing. This isn't going to happen. And if it does happen, you don't want to own Tesla. You want to own gold if this happens, because the only way Tesla goes to $8.5 trillion is if, number one, the robots take over the world and force you to buy their stock, or number two, inflation gets so bad that the shares just go vertical because the dollars are becoming worthless. So I don't really care too much about this, but Tesla stock down 4.2% now, selling off with the rest of the market here. We've got Grand Theft Auto 6 is going to be postponed again to 2026. Let's not spend too much time on this one. This is the second delay for Grand Theft Auto 6. It's going to hurt Take-Two stock. That one down 5.5% here on that news, $238.46 for Take-Two shares. We got to talk about this story, guys. I love this story because I hate it so much. Does that make sense? I don't know. Let's move on. Meta is earning a fortune on a deluge of fraudulent ads, documents show. Almost like it isn't AI making Meta all this money. They're just selling scams to you. In other words, Facebook is nothing but a tax on stupid. Huh. That's interesting. Meta projected 10% of its 2024 revenue would come from ads for scams and banned goods, documents seen by Reuters show. And the social media giant internally estimates that its platform shows users 15 billion scam ads a day. Among its responses to suspected rogue marketers, charging them a premium for ads and issuing reports on scammiest scammers. No, they don't ban them. They don't put you in Facebook jail. No, that's for people who say mean things about the wrong actress or express opinions about the government. They go to Facebook jail. Scammers, they just have to pay a little bit more to rip you off. Is this not the worst company in history? Meta internally projected late last year that it would earn about 10% of its overall annual revenue, or $16 billion, from running advertising for scams and banned goods, internal company documents show. A cache of previously unreported documents reviewed by Reuters also shows that the social media giant for at least 3 years failed to identify and stop an avalanche of ads that exposed Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, billions of users, to fraudulent e-commerce and investment schemes, illegal online casinos, and the sale of banned medical products. On average, 1 December 2024 document notes, the company shows its platform's users an estimated 15 billion higher risk scam advertisements, those that show clear signs of being fraudulent every day. Meta earns about $7 billion in annualized revenue from the category of scam ads each year. Another late 2024 document shows. Much of the fraud came from marketers acting suspiciously enough to be flagged by Meta's internal warning systems. But the company only bans advertisers if its automated systems predict the marketers are at least 95% certain to be committing fraud, the document shows. So if it's 94% likely to be a fraud, they'll still let that one sail. They'll show that one to grandma. If the company is less certain but still believes the advertiser is likely a scammer, Meta charges higher ad rates as a penalty, according to the documents. The idea is to dissuade suspected advertisers from placing ads. In other words, crime is legal on Facebook for a fee. The documents further notes that users who click on scam ads are likely to see more of them because of Meta's ad personalization system, which tries to deliver ads based on a user's interests. All right, so is our investment in AI paying off, or are we just okay with fraud? Is this not the worst company in the world? I mean, maybe NVIDIA's worse. They're the ones that are really robbing everybody. But good God, 10% of their revenue from fraud, 15 billion scam ads a day. And look, guys, it's very simple. There is a very simple solve here. They could do what I do. When a scammer reaches out to you to promote their bullshit AI or crypto product, delete the message. Don't even answer it. Do not engage. Don't take their money. What a concept. Don't take money from scammers. Oh my God, we're making so much money on AI. We're hyperscaling. We're compute constrained. Nope, they're just showing scams to grandma. They're ripping people off. Meta stock is down not nearly enough this morning. 1.84% lower, $607.57. Good God. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to Matt Peterson, and thank you to Mission M&J, who flagged this one after the sign-off yesterday. Matt Peterson sent me a super chat right as I was signing off. He said, sharing profit from my gold lemonade stand, throwback to the lemonade stand story I've been telling about the AI bubble. Know a few people in the AI trade, and they are so high on it. Yeah, I know a few, too. I can tell you. Look, all the AI bros who have been acting like they're the best traders in the world because all they're doing is piling into a mania, they're all going to be telling you, oh, they saw this coming, that they predicted this, and oh, they were all on top of this. If only you had bought my trading service, you would have known. Yeah, everybody's going to act like this was their idea. But we know whose idea this was, right? We know who saw this coming. Nobody saw this coming. Yep. Hey, I also want to say thank you very much to Greg. Welcome, Greg, to the channel. Greg is now in the melon patch. Thank you so much, Greg, for supporting the channel. I appreciate that very much. Big Mouth Barry says, Elf Beauty saw a 35% drop yesterday. When women stop buying makeup, you know we're in a recession. Have a greatest weekend. You know, the lipstick indicator, if you will, like cosmetics is like that universal, what do you call it, like a guilty pleasure, or during hard times, women actually buy more cosmetics because it's a cheap expense that makes them feel better about themselves. But that is running face first into the work from home phenomenon and the fact that people don't go into the office as much. And do you really need all the extra cosmetics? And the fact that people are just broke and the price of cosmetics is way up. So that doesn't surprise me. But what does that also tell you when one of those historical correlations of something that usually does really well in a recession is no longer doing well? Maybe nobody will be spared this time around. Great point, Big Mouth Barry. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Innovative Sustainable Solutions became a YouTube member as well. Thank you, ISS. I think he just renewed. I've seen he's been in the melon patch for some time now, but thank you for your ongoing support for the channel. Guys, just a reminder, Melonhead members, you get to free super chat every month. Feel free to use that. I will read and respond to your ideas and questions on the air. Steve Canyon says, journalism lives on Rumble. If you want your message out, you know, I used to upload my stuff to Rumble automatically and it stopped working. I think I need to probably take a hard look at doing Rumble again, to be honest with you. Look, I got Bloomberged by Wall Street Journal yesterday with that demonetization. They did the same thing to Gamers Nexus. When Gamers Nexus ran that entire documentary, which must have had like a $600,000 budget on that documentary. They flew all over China actually buying GPUs for this documentary. And then Bloomberg files a copyright complaint and YouTube took the video down. Just unbelievable what they did to Gamers Nexus. And then Gamers Nexus came out. They turned Bloomberg into a verb. When that happens, you've been Bloombergged. So Wall Street Journal Bloombergged me yesterday. Yeah, I challenged it, and I think I'm going to win that challenge. But just goes to show you guys, the financial press, they're not doing their job. They are running interference for this bubble. They're circling the wagons around this bubble instead of asking the hard questions. It's been one of my gripes this whole freaking time. It's not Rando's job to ask these questions. There are people who are trained to do this. Journalists, it's their job to do it. They won't touch it. By the way, zero journalists have still reached out to me about this round tripping bubble after screaming from the highest mountaintop for 2 years about this thing that now everybody knows is true. Not one journalist in the world wants to talk to the guy who had it 2 years before anybody else. Why is that? Maybe because there's a memo going around in the financial press. Don't talk to this guy. We don't want the world to hear what he has to say, because that's what they've been telling you for 2 years. See also, don't listen to Twitter randos. Good God, Steve Canyon. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Hey, Innovative Sustainable Solutions, thank you, sir, for the generosity. He says, Andrew Sorkin's 1929 is a good read. So many parallels. The poison pill was margin. Oh, Andrew Sorkin. Yeah, you know, Andrew Sorkin, maybe if all of a sudden I stop acting like it's the best economy ever, maybe one day they'll turn me into a real boy. That's Andrew Ross Sorkin. I'm not the president of the Andrew Ross Sorkin fan club, you may have noticed. By the way, Andrew, you know, now that there's an R in the White House, congratulations, you're back to asking hard questions about journalism. That's good. Hey, maybe after spending 22, 3, and 4 telling everybody it was the best economy ever, what changed between 24 and 25? That's a legitimate question. But yeah, thank you very much, ISS. I appreciate the super chat and the support of the channel. Hey, Ed, what's going on, brother? He says, if you're using margin or actively trading options on AI and quantum, please stop, save your money. That's solid, Ed. I agree. I'm Jack Gamble, and I approve this message. This is just the beginning, and market makers will happily take your hard-earned money. Hashtag no Oklo. Yeah, no FOMO Oklo. Look, Oklo is still trading around $100. They're down pretty big in the last few days, but Oklo was overvalued at 20. So is it cheap at 100? Hell no. Oklo has no product. Oklo has no revenue. They have no earnings. Oklo has a story, just like Sam Altman and Jensen Huang. I am hopeful that small modular reactors get built. I believe in nuclear technology, but let's get one built and then talk about the thousands that we're going to build in the next 2 years somehow. Let's get to one first. That's a big milestone on the way to several thousand. One. Thank you, Ed, for supporting the channel. Hey, Ed is back again. Says, please bring Melody back on to discuss building progress or lack thereof and the vacant data centers across the country. Great job on this streaming endeavor. Go Rowan. Go Profs. Is that what that is? Go Rowan. Or do we have a fellow Rowan alumnus here? Okay. Interesting. Very much. He says, bring Melody back on. That is a fantastic idea. Melody is sharp. I was actually just talking to Melody yesterday. She has been through similar experiences with Realtor.com, owned by the same parent company, Dow Jones, by the way. That's a good idea to talk about building progress or lack thereof. The home builders did not like what Jerome Powell said last week. That's for sure. Hey, thank you very much, Ed. Go Rowan. Appreciate that very much. Uncle Fedster says, happy Friday, Jack. Thank you for all the great content. You are most welcome. Thank you for the support of the channel and for the good vibes and kind words, Uncle Fedster. You rock, brother. Hey, Frankie, gifted 10 Nobody Special Finance memberships. Welcome to the Melon Patch, you 10 lucky new melon heads, you. Be sure and say thank you to Frank in the comments. Frank, thank you, sir, very much. Ross Pavlik says, Grok just AGI'd that we're in the golden age of AI slop, but enlightenment or better tech could turn it around. If we're not at the top, I guess we're reaching enlightenment. Look, AI technology is not going away, guys. Chatbots aren't going to disappear. This is, I would use the internet bubble as a metaphor, right? The internet bubble burst, but the internet didn't disappear, and the internet eventually took over like everything. It just took like 20 extra years. I don't know that AI will ever get to the point of taking over everything, but the technology is not going to disappear. A lot of the companies are going to disappear. OpenAI probably chief among them. Certainly CoreWeave, NVIDIA will probably buy them just to avoid the headline of CoreWeave going bankrupt. But AI slop, obviously, that is what it is. The point is, I think several major breakthroughs along the lines or on the level of that attention white paper that Google put out in 2017, Google DeepMind, I think we need two or three more breakthroughs of that scale to really get to AGI, artificial general intelligence, or super intelligence. The Google white paper was a big breakthrough, and then we had this big experiment. Let's give it all the compute and all the data we can steal, and here's the largest accounting fraud in history to finance this grand experiment. That experiment has failed. The product got good, not nearly good enough for the trillions of dollars of market cap that sprang up around it. So this bubble is going to burst. I think we're probably in the early innings of that burst happening. We still haven't hit the waterfall of selling, but give it a chance. And then maybe several years from now, it finally lives up to this promise of like breakthroughs in science. But for now, that is a long way off. Thank you, Ross, for supporting the channel. The Ponderosa, welcome. I'm going to have the Bonanza theme song playing in my head now. The Ponderosa, very good. That was the name of the Cartwright Ranch. Thank you, sir, for becoming a Melonhead member. Welcome to the Melon Patch. Nashville Pasta Man says, what do you want me to do? Two kids in private school and wife getting her master's. We want you to do your job. Yes. Are you still living with your mom, by the way? That's the scene from Big Short when they went to talk to the journalist at the Wall Street Journal. And he was more worried about losing his access to Wall Street bankers than asking them hard questions and telling the truth about what they were doing. Ain't that just the perfect metaphor for don't take advice from Twitter randos and from the copyright strikes for criticizing OpenAI CFO Sarah Friar? Yep, Pasta Man, it's amazing how these Big Short metaphors just keep repeating themselves. It's almost like we didn't learn anything from the GFC. Maybe we didn't learn anything because the government bailed out all the a-holes that caused it. And so if there's no consequences, don't be shocked when the behavior repeats. Amazing, isn't it? Anybody who's raised a toddler could have told you that would happen. Thank you very much, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel, sir. I appreciate that very much. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Welcome to the Melon Patch, you new guys. Thank you so much for the super chats and the generosity. You guys are awesome. Also, shout out to my magnanimous Melonhead members on YouTube, Patreon, Buy Me a Coffee. Today is our get-together on Zoom at 2 o'clock for our live Q&A that we do every week. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out. Hey, Wall Street Journal. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I love you guys. Till next time, live small and dream big.